Unlike NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which was the subject of heated political debate in the U.S. during the 1990s, a new free trade treaty, known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, has escaped most public attention and controversy. The proposed free trade treaty, the largest in U.S. history, includes the nations of Australia, Brunei, Chile, Malaysia, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, the U.S., and Vietnam. Japan, China, Mexico, and Canada are expected to join the talks later. Although ongoing negotiations have been kept secret, leaked documents reveal that the U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk is pushing countries involved in negotiations to give pharmaceutical companies new patent and monopoly rights that could limit the public's access to affordable medicines such as retroviral drugs to treat HIV and AIDS. Other concerns center around the treaty's expansion of corporate power to challenge national laws on worker rights, environmental regulations, and consumer protections. Despite the fact that TPP negotiations have been held under conditions of unprecedented secrecy, some 600 corporate advisors have access to details of the talks, including draft text of the treaty's language, while the public, members of Congress, journalists, and civil society are excluded. During the most recent round of treaty negotiations in Leesburg, Virginia, protesters from labor, consumer, and environmental groups engaged in peaceful protest and direct action to focus public attention on their demand for more transparency in the negotiations. While U.S. officials have pledged to hold a public comment period and congressional review after Trans-Pacific Partnership talks are complete, critics maintain this isn't enough to provide civil society any meaningful input into the final language of the treaty. Your reporter spoke with Ben Beachy, Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who describes the many concerns activist groups have with ongoing negotiations over the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
Most people will be familiar with NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, an agreement widely repudiated and rejected by the populaces of the majority of the populaces of all of North America, of Mexico, Canada, and the United States, as proven again just this summer in polls. This is NAFTA on steroids. This is NAFTA Plus. It's the largest NAFTA expansion we've seen. It would be the United States' largest so-called trade agreement, and could also possibly be the last one the U.S. ever negotiates because it's been framed as a docking agreement, which means that any other country hereafter could join into this agreement. And Ron Kirk, our trade representative, has said, in fact, he would love nothing more than to see China join. And so this could very well be the last big blueprint for what trade policy is going to look like from here on out. And thus far, it looks like a repetition of NAFTA's failures.
Tell our listeners a bit about what are the major concerns that your organization, labor groups, consumer groups, and environmental activists have with this free trade agreement that's being negotiated.
Certainly. So this is... when people think about free trade agreements, they think about like trading goods, anything from like, you know, corn to auto parts. That certainly is part of this. That's part of every trade agreement. But principally, these trade agreements aren't actually trade agreements. They're not about trading goods. NAFTA wasn't, and nor is the Trans-Pacific Partnership its cousin. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has 29 chapters in it. As far as we can tell, only three of those chapters actually talk about trading goods. So if this is really about trade, why write the other 26 chapters? Those other 26 chapters are very concerning to us because they are essentially a rewriting of public policy that's in the interest of consumers, rewriting it so it'd be in the interest of corporations. And it's largely the corporations who are doing the rewriting. There's 600 representatives who are in the official trade advisory system of the United States, and the vast majority of them, about 85% of them, represent the largest corporations in the U.S., Walmart, Halliburton, Dow Chemical. They're all in there. The single most represented entity in our trade advisory system is General Electric, which is, you know, notorious pioneer. Actually, it bragged about how it was a pioneer for outsourcing. And so for us, this is really an agreement against public interest written by corporations, and we are relying entirely on leaked chapters within this agreement because the text has not been revealed to the public. These same 600 corporate representatives I mentioned, meanwhile, have online access through a secure site anytime they'd like to the text. Even our Congress members don't have that. The access has been much more limited by the United States Trade Representative, and representatives from both parties have complained loudly that this has been unprecedented suppression of the text from Congress, not allowing them to have oversight, which, as our elected representatives, they should. much less the U.S. public, which has no access to text other than through a leaked version that we've seen.
Well, Ben, if you had to put it in a nutshell, how would you frame the whole issue, maybe in comparison to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement that everybody knew about and was a big discussion topic during the presidential election back in the 90s? How would you frame this in terms of what's of concern to the average person?
Yeah, well, I mean, the average person right now is concerned with jobs. And with NAFTA, we saw the decimation of at least a million manufacturing jobs. Actually, since the time that NAFTA was passed, one out of every four manufacturing jobs in the U.S. has disappeared, has been eroded, as factories have found it easier and easier to go overseas and set up shop there. It really facilitates offshoring. The erosion of our manufacturing base, even for those who haven't really felt it directly, those who have not been kicked out of a factory, it's really put downward pressure on wages. It's made it harder for unions to negotiate, and it's cited even by the Federal Reserve as one of the principal reasons we see increasing worker productivity in the United States, and yet a decreasing share of income going to workers. Most of it, increasing amounts are going to Wall Street capital. And so this divide between the workers and capital is increasing. Joblessness, especially in manufacturing, has continued at high levels, and this replication of this deal, another NAFTA with half the Pacific, actually it's an open-ended treaty deal in which China could even join, really just threatens to just perpetuate this. The question is when will it end? Have we not learned our lesson? Obama in 2008, as a candidate, really campaigned hard against NAFTA for this very reason. He went to the Rust Belt and said, we know why the Rust Belt turned rusty. We need a new trade agenda, one that actually prioritizes job growth rather than just continual race to the bottom job erosion. That's not what we see. We see a perpetuation of the same. A few chapters we have access to in the text of the TPP are a copy and paste, largely, of the NAFTA text. And so if you are against NAFTA and you don't think that the erosion of one out of every four manufacturing jobs is a good thing for the country, you've got all the reason in the world to be against the TPP.
That was Ben Beachy, Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Find links to more information on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Treaty on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.